Blog Talk Radio.
Desperate House Witches. My name is Raina Starr. I am your host for the hour. I'm usually your host for every hour. Never mind. Anyway, Desperate House Witches is not a GPG or even an R-rated show, so if bad language, bodily functions, dirty talk of any kind might upset you, this may not be the show for you. Desperate House Witches is brought to you by the one, the incredibly wicked one herself, the amazing Dorothy Morrison. Please check out www.wickedwitchstudios.com. She is doing her October special early, so get on board. She's got candles, spells, oils, sprays, you name it, she's got it. Please check out wickedwitchstudios.com. It is a social media sale, so please get on the Facebook page for that direct link. With me for the hour is the amazing Astrea Taylor, author of Air Magic, as well as Intuitive Witchcraft, I believe. Yes, you're amazing. Hi, Astrea.
Hey there, Raina. How are you?
It's early in the morning, but that's cool. We're good.
Yes.
How are you doing?
I'm good, and I appreciate you coming this early in the morning so I could attend my friend's wedding today. It's really special.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. That's right. I actually, you know, it's definitely not something I never do. I do a lot of early shows. As a matter of fact, I have a 9:30 show next Saturday. So you totally have not done anything weird or strange to me whatsoever. I'm just so happy to have you finally. It's like, some authors you have to chase a really long time, and you know, and I was very happy that you finally said yes. I'm like,
yeah,
she doesn't like me. She doesn't.
Oh,
like
no,
me
I love you.
Show.
I love your show. I've been so busy. I've been writing books like a crazy person.
Tell me about that.
Yeah.
You know, I always wonder about the process about writing books, and I ask a lot of authors that particular question. You know, like, do you get asked to write certain books? Are you just like this font of ideas and you have all of these books backlogged in your brain?
Yes to both. Sometimes, you know, you have an idea for a book and you just start outlining it and it comes to life right before your eyes.
Uh-huh.
And it's wonderful. And sometimes you have to research so many details of a book, and it's more like a grad school dissertation or something. Intuitive Witchcraft is something that is kind of like who I am, basically. It just kind of flowed through me as I wrote it. I was in a trance most of the time when I wrote it. But Air Magic was much different because I had to research the fuck out of that. It was insane. but I love research too. So it's another side of the coin. It's just very different, you know?
Yeah. And I find that, you know, most writers are natural researchers because there's so much to look up, especially about a topic, you know, with as many variables as witchcraft. So I find it fascinating. I love to do research. I'm just not a writer. It's just not my forte. I don't even know if I have a forte at this point. I just like talking, so that's what I do. But I love talking to writers about, you know, how they got into whatever it is that they're into. Like, I know for a little bit about you. I know you had a somewhat magical upbringing, but you weren't necessarily in a tradition. Do you find that helps, actually, when you're first starting out as a witch?
I think it does, because I think I hear a lot of people saying, oh, it's hard for me to feel energy. It's hard for me to visualize. It's hard for me to meditate. And all of those are parts of my upbringing. Like, it's hard for me to conceive of what the Fae are. My mom practiced with the Fae as well. So all of these things I have a familiarity with. But when it comes to the traditions, like, I didn't know what was what. So I started my witchcraft journey when I was a teenager, just going to a local shop, just talking with people, doing little crafty things. And then I went to a pagan spirit gathering where I learned about Wicca and everything that Wicca has to offer. And Selena Fox is just amazing. I've looked up to her for decades. And I just adore everything she does. That was my big introduction into, traditions, basically.
Yeah. Do you find yourself aligned with a tradition now, or is it just easier to be, do you find traditions limiting? Is it easier to be more free-flowing if you're not, quote-unquote, tied to something or feeling tied to something?
So I view it like a personality kind of feature. I think everyone has ways that, they can learn things from traditions. Like, I certainly did, even though I wasn't like initiated, I just went to a lot of Wiccan events. So I learned about things that way. But the way that I do things is kind of like improv, like music. Like, I don't read the sheet music. I just kind of like make things up as I go along, and they're meaningful. They're not just like whimsical things. They actually mean a lot of things to me, whatever I'm doing. And that was kind of the heart of intuitive witchcraft. And the reason I wrote that book is because somebody was really disparaging that path, and they thought that traditions and covens were the only way to go. It's kind of like Owl House, the cartoon, if you've seen that. He was like, everybody has to be in a coven. And I was like, I can't believe I'm hearing this. I guess I need to write that book.
And I'm glad you did, because somebody actually told you that your practice was dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, he said, he said, it's as dangerous as running around with a knife performing surgery on people. And I said, what the fuck do you think I'm doing?
Exactly. No, and I think that's, first of all, rude. Second of all, who the fuck does that person think they are? So I have to ask, do you remember what tradition that person was a member of?
He did not say, but he just espoused all the traditions.
Okay. See, this is the gatekeeper aspect of shit that Gardner, I'm a Gardnerian, but this is the kind of shit my folks get slammed for. It's kind of like, shut the fuck up. You're making us all look bad. We're not all like that, because a lot of us get accused of gatekeeping, and it's like, not my happy ass. I don't know enough to be dangerous. I just, this is just the practice that I was kind of raised in, so that's what I do. So, but it's because of tradition and history. It's not because, it's the only way to go. It's really not, and I think most magic, when you get down to it, really should be intuitive to a certain extent, or at least come from you as opposed to a book. I mean, anybody can mimic anyone else by reading their book and espousing all of their words and, just using what they've already put on paper. And it's lovely if it works out and you're completely aligned with whatever your text is. But that's not real to me. To me, that's not human. We're all going to come at things with our own feelings about stuff and our own ways of interpreting. Oh, God, you said something that cracked me up. You said, everything is not a sign. I almost pissed myself, because there's so many people that I know who it's like, oh, the wind blew this way. It must mean this. And I'm like, no, sometimes shit is just shit. And it cracks me up that everybody is looking for the divinity and stuff that's just normal. So I love that you said that.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I studied earth science, and I studied botany, and I studied climate change, and I studied oceanography and, you know, weather. And I know, you know, most things are just Mother Nature doing her thing. But, you know, there are certain allowances, breakthroughs, I would say, of the spirit mm-hmm. world when that communication does actually happen. And knowing the difference between the two is huge. It takes a lot of discernment, though, and it's something that I don't think is promoted very much in our culture, as much as it should be, among the new people anyway.
I think it's a problem throughout. I mean, there are folks that I've known for many years who are still like, every little thing must be a sign. And you don't want to be the asshole bursting someone's bubble, but it's kind of like, oh, like, no, that shit was going to happen anyway. I'm really sorry. Oh, God, I don't want to make you feel bad, so I'm not going to say anything. But, I mean, how do you discern? Because sometimes, I'll be honest with you, there are times I still have problems with knowing if it's spirit or not, because a lot, I'm more on the other end of poo-pooing everything. I think as a witch, I am more critical and disbelieving and more of a skeptic than like your average person. And I don't know why that is.
And that's the beauty of it. Like, we're all allowed to have our own opinions and our own experiences and stuff. You know, there's common sense, which I hope we all have. you know, but, yeah, there's just, all different ways to be a witch. And I think that is really beautiful. I mean, some people have tried to tell me that gatekeeping doesn't exist and that I'm, you know, just trying to use this as a, you know, to get attention or something. And it's genuinely a reaction inside of me. I have a very rebellious spirit. If people try to tell me what to do, sometimes I want to do the exact opposite if I don't like them, you know?
Yeah.
So, that's why I had to write the book. Shut it down.
I love it. I love that rebellion. See, and it's funny because I was talking to a mutual friend of ours, Laura Tempest Zakroff, was on last night.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about how sometimes when somebody tries the zinger, she'll put it in a book, like, again. You know, if somebody doesn't like something that she's written, she's like, yeah, guess what? That's coming with a follow-up in my next book. And I'm just dying. And I love the fact that you're like that, too, that you're like, yeah, guess what? It's coming at you. I think that's wonderful. And I love the fact that you're willing to do that and own it, because a lot of people, you know, they're so interested in being liked that they're not real about it. You know what I mean? It's like being liked mm-hmm. is not the point. Getting information out there that's correct and, you know, useful, I think, is supposed to be the point. So I love that. I think that's hilarious. So I think you're amazing. What tools do you use to help you discern between something just being life and something being really intrinsically magical?
Well, it depends on whether I've asked for a sign. If I've asked for a sign and I see something, it's more likely to be a sign. Still not guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
But then I tune into my intuition. I kind of like do this throughout the day. Like, I tune into my intuition, my body, and how I'm feeling, where I'm holding energy, you know, kind of try to calm things down if they're not calm. And then I tune into the energy around me as well. So I kind of feel the difference between those two. And if the energy around me is feeling like a higher vibration, like this big swell of feeling and emotion, then it's more likely to be spirit. If it's, you know, regular, which I'm aware of, like the baseline, because I do it a lot.
Sure.
If it just feels like the baseline, then it's probably not as magical. But, you know, we all have blind spots when it comes to this as well. So I look to see if anything is really irregular. Like if this butterfly floats by and like, okay, I'm not, that's not Aunt Margie. necessarily. But if, you know, if the butterfly lands on me and, like, hangs out for a while and, like, maybe makes eye contact, then that's really special. That's a really unique experience. And I'm getting goosebumps just talking about that, just thinking about it. So, but, yeah, that would be spirit.
Yeah, and I think what you've said is really important, because I think we're so busy sometimes looking for signs that we're not listening to our own body. And I think that's mm-hmm. really important to remember. Your gut will tell you a lot more than you think it will if you tune into it. I think we're so mm-hmm. everything has been so crazy for the past couple of years, especially in the day-to-day, just, you know, trying to get through life without getting sick or whatever. I think we forget to do that gut check, that, you know, okay, let's take 5 minutes here and just tune everything else out and listen to what's happening inside. And this is like constantly being reinforced for me lately through the folks that I have on the show. Mm-hmm. So it's really been helpful for me to kind of tune out the white noise and hear what's actually being sent as a message, as opposed to, oh, I just, you know, it's just another stomach ache today, you know, from stress. Sometimes, you know, there's a lot to be said about knowing in your gut reaction. You know, your body is more sensitive than your mind sometimes, I think. And, you know, I mm-hmm. think if you listen more to your body, you can get those subtle clues or messages. So thank you for that. That's very helpful.
Well, I have this theory about the gut, actually. It's, you know, we have 10 times more microbes in our bodies than we do our own cells, animal cells. And the microbes match what's in the earth about like 78% or so. Thinking of a journal article. But I think like the living microbes in the earth and in our gut is kind of like Gaia in the earth is within us, and we are tuning into her, literally the earth and our ancestry as well, because gut microbial diversity can be inherited. So it's really tuning into so much more than just like your belly area. It goes deeper than that. It like goes into so many ancient things, and I just feel so connected to all of that whenever I tune in now, ever since I learned that.
Wow. Are you a scientist? That's amazing.
Yes, I am. Like, you'll see in a lot of my books, I cite scientific journal articles and etymology and all kinds of things. Like, I am such a nerd, and I just love to nerd out in my books. Like, I have this insatiable curiosity. So whenever I write a book, like, I look things up. Like, I go in a million different directions, and I want to get the whole story. And so that's why with the book that I'm writing right now with Jason Mankey about the Greek gods, like, it goes really into depth. And it's because I've always had these questions that have never been answered. I'm like, okay, I get it, but what really happened? Like, and people are like, we don't really know what happened at the Eleusinian Mysteries. And I'm like, well, we have a lot more than one book has. You know, I had to read like 50 sources to get a more round story. But, I just haven't read any satisfying books on those topics, so that's why I write about them.
That's wonderful. So basically, if you're given a theory, just let me see if I understand this, because I'm loving this conversation. So if you're given a theory and you read about it and you don't like the answer, you're like, this is bullshit, I'm going to keep reading and find something else. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome. I love to retort. And that's like part of the scientific method. It's like, with all due respect, here's some other evidence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to say things appear to be in the scientific world, but you know, we don't use laws very much, except for, you know, gravity and whatnot. But science is there. Science is magical too, and I approach the magical world as a scientist.
That's wonderful. I know so few people who do that. No, seriously. Because for me, the people a lot of people that I have encountered, obviously not all of them, but I have encountered a great number of people who are like very dismissive of science in a very fundamentalist kind of way. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't realize that some people were ignoring certain scientific facts that we're aware of today because they believe that their protection is coming from magic, which isn't to dismiss the possibility that magic is protective, but I think you have to use a level of wisdom as far as science goes and be accepting of. I mean, I always thought that science and magic were connected because I was lucky enough. My first husband was a scientific witch and believed, you know, in the connections thereof and used to try to teach me about quantum physics and magic, which was, I will honestly admit, above my little head. But definitely always drew the science of magic into the conversation. And, you know, and I guess that's part of why I'm like, of course science is, you know, real and acceptable and works with magic. But I'm kind of surprised by the folks that don't put the two together. Do you have problems with folks not wanting to accept that, or is it a harder explain than you think it's going to be?
Some people think they know everything, and I'm not one of those people. The people who think they know everything are very close-minded. So science always evolves. We're always developing theories as to what things mm-hmm. actually mean and what things are and what's going on, what's happening. And, you know, we have proof to some degree. Sometimes that proof is, you know, 100%. Sometimes it's 90%. Sometimes it's 63%. You know, you get into biology, things get really messy because there's just so much going on. But I accept that people have their own way to figure out, you know, what they want to believe in. But yeah, it's science is pretty cool too. Like, if you look at the way that you set up a hypothesis and then you set up all the ways to test the hypothesis, I mean, it's basically magic. You're doing magic. Like, this inspired a lot of my magic. You set things up, you do the experiment, you see what happens. Mm-hmm. Like, you write everything down. This is what witches do, right? And then, you report back. You're like, this financial spell, you know, got me $63. Yay. I'm going to do it again, but I'm going to add more mints. See what happens.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a way to develop things. And
I know. People are so dismissive if something doesn't work the first time or it doesn't work the same way the second time. And it's like, but the whole thing about science is that it develops with more information, which is what I think we're all supposed to do anyway as just people. You know, if you never go past a certain level of education or toys to play with, you wind up playing with toys that are, you know, you should be well advanced beyond at this point. So I just find it interesting that some folks are so tied to things. They want to be stuck in a certain mindset or a certain way of doing magic. I mean, maybe it's because I get to talk to, you know, cool folks like you who write books and do things, you know, that I it's opened my world as far as different ways of looking at magic and different ways of performing magic even. I find it interesting that some people would want to stay stuck in a certain mindset and not go beyond that, because everything evolves. I mean, the subjects we talk about now were taboo 40 years ago, you know? I mean, subjects of sexuality and you know, all kinds of things have completely evolved over time. I'm just surprised that people who don't want to evolve with it, I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
Well,
but anyway.
No, actually, if you look at think of a stagnant pool of water, you know, that's where a lot of algae can grow and mosquitoes and, you know, those algae release toxins often. And the water isn't doing, it's like it's a natural thing. I think it's a natural thing within humans as well, but it's much more healthy to travel with your mind, to go places and to go learn new things and keep broadening those horizons.
I agree. So tell me about air magic. Like, what was your inspiration? Was this something you had been planning? Were you asked to do it? What was the story behind this?
I was asked to do this, and it was such an honor to be asked to do this book by Llewellyn. I had been working on a different book called The Witch's Bell for the Tool series, and my editor was like, yeah, stop writing that proposal. I want you to do this. And I was like, do you want me to do a proposal? She's like, no, I have a format. It's going to be good. And I was actually like, can I do fire magic instead? She was like, everybody wants to do fire magic. Why does everybody want to do fire magic? And I was like, well, I'm a fire dancer. And she's like, we have someone for fire magic. We have a backup for fire magic. And I was like, okay, I'll do air magic then. But it worked out really well because I am such an air sign. I'm a Libra, and I'm an Aquarius moon, and I have Jupiter and Gemini. So I have a big grand triangle in my chart. And Mercury is my ruling planet. So it's really fun. Like, I love air signs. Air sign people are so great. But yeah, delving into, oh yeah, you're a Libra, right?
Yep.
Yeah. It's Libras. I love Libras too.
Me too.
Yeah, so I feel like we just have this innate ability to talk and to think about complex matters, and that's what air magic is all about. It's about the mind, communication, breath, awareness of the spirit residing in the body as breath, you know, paying attention to how our breath changes our body and riding the wave of breath to modulate what the body is actually feeling. You know, air is a big initiator. It starts a lot of things. It changes things. It travels places. And we can start, like, a different mindset just with our breath alone, which I think is so fascinating. It's something I learned in yoga when I was taking that a long time ago, pre-pandemic. it was fascinating to write that book. I learned so much, and I had so many footnotes, and I think I had 111, and I was like, this is a magical number. And then Heather Green, my editor, was like, let's take some of those out. This is a tiny little book. It's not meant to be, like, a scientific book. I go, okay. And she's like, just list it in the back. Okay. But, yeah, I loved writing it. I loved researching it. And I feel like it kind of helped me lead up toward the next book as well, the one that I'm writing with Jason Menke, just because of how heavy the research was. Like, for that one, we have over 400 footnotes.
Holy crap.
Well, you know, it's a very – we really wanted to give people – places to go if they wanted more information about something. And I feel like with the Greek gods, there's a lot of people just making stuff up. Like, I can't name names, but we really wanted, like, a book where it was more rigorous, it was more disciplined, it was actually real, and not just, like, people pranced about. like, I need to know where, when, how, you know. So we have that.
Yeah. Well, because the way the stories have always been presented, there's not a whole lot of background that I've ever seen in any of the stories, the Greek mythology stories that I've read. It all starts, you know, somewhere with Zeus, and everything else comes out of that, and there's no whys and wherefores for Hades or Persephone or... I mean, it's like, well, okay, we know the theory, but we don't know anything seriously concrete. And I just felt always that the story seemed to start in the middle of something else.
They did. Yeah. So most stories were rewritten several times, and the ones that we know from, like, Homer and Hesiod, they were the result of the adherents of Zeus coming into the land and overturning the gods that were there before, which were Poseidon and Demeter. And actually, they think that Zeus and Poseidon were the same god, but the name kind of got mixed up along the way. And because they both have stories where they were horses and they were with a horse Demeter, and they're both listed as fathers of Persephone. So we go back into pre-Greek history and culture and say, it looks like, you know, this deity originated from Cyprus, Minoans or the Mycenaeans. And then we also not just tell the myth of that, which I'm sick of the myth, you know, like I know the myth. Mm-hmm. And like it's really tempting to view things as like as if they're actually people, but they're not. They were gods. And a lot of times the actions described in the myth were actions described by inanimate objects, like Zeus's fertility. Like the rains are fertile. Rain contains a lot of nutrients in it, which fertilize the land. They literally fertilize the land, the earth goddesses, the earth mothers, and so forth. But so we go into the culture and we're like, okay, this was when they were honored. This is how they were honored. We don't know a lot about some deities like Hestia, but we can surmise that this probably happens. And, you know, we use that language just to be clear that, you know, it's a hypothesis. Nobody really knows right now.
Right. I'm really looking forward to that book as well. I'm very psyched because I want to know more than what I've been given since childhood, because it's kind of been like the same regurgitated stuff. So this is going to be
I'll send you a copy.
Thank you. And you and Jason can come on and discuss it. That'd be great.
I would love that. Yeah.
I would too. That'd be fun. But, you know, I love Air Magic. I haven't read Earth Magic. My apologies to the author. But I love Air Magic because you've done so much research on, you know, the lore of it and how to use it and what it means in daily magical practice and breathing. I mean, you've got spells in here and it looks like you put in a ton of research on this one as well. And I love that. I love that about
you
because you seem to do that with everything, but it helps. I mean, there are folks who write books, you know, that I don't talk to on the air, obviously, but there are folks who write books that it's just all coming out of them. And I'm like, well, where did you get that theory? And they're like, it came to me. And I'm like, no, that's, you know, I'm not dismissing it as nothing ever comes to anybody. Of course it does. But, you know, there's got to be some kind of evidence-based something. You've performed this before, someone taught this to you. There's got to be a backstory somewhere. I get concerned about folks maybe going in a direction where nothing's evidence-based. And you know, being an older person, I do believe in science and I do believe in research. All of the things I've ever had to submit have had to have research and footnotes and citing sources and all of that. So I'm very appreciative of writers like yourself who do the work and, you know, put the time in, because not all books are meant to just fall out of your head. Some books, you know, something instructive or something with a lot of history, you've got to be able to cite your sources, and you do a lovely job of that. but I do like this
cute.
Book. It's particularly important to me right now because as I had said to my guest last night, I restarted physical therapy, and breathing during certain exercises or when certain things are being done to my neck is important, you know, for staying calm, for not tensing muscles. I mean, your air, your breath is very important for so many things. And I find that from a magical standpoint, you know, because you did talk about it, obviously, air magic. You mentioned having an altar, an air altar, where you have your air tools and things, which I found interesting because my tendency is to put everything together, and maybe that's something I need to change because I have, you know, my chalice and my candle and my incense and my, you know, all my different things on the same shelf, and maybe I need to give more reverence to each individual part than I actually do.
You know, if it feels right, then I would say try it out, you know, see how it goes. But I'm kind of the opposite of a minimalist. It's not like I have a lot of stuff, but I do have, like, little altars everywhere, like that book, you know. I saw that book, and I just had to read it. Even though it's a fiction book, it's nothing about magic or altars at all, really. But, I have little altars everywhere, and I love them. And they're all special little places for me. So they help me, like, combine things that are alike and really feel the energy of that element or the ancestors or my home. You know, it's like really magical. But, you know, I've lived in places where that's not possible due to space. You know, you don't have a lot of space. And when it comes to that, like, you can use visual images as well. You can make a collage and print it out or find something online. You know, I feel like all of those things that inspire you can be used, whether, you know, they're all together or they're separate.
Yeah. I mean, I constantly am fascinated by new methodologies of ways to connect with ancestors or with just the elements themselves, because, you know, to say I've gathered a whole bunch of shit in my time, I have a 5-tiered altar that it's kind of like one of the, you know, those ladder bookcases. That's what I use. It's like this 5-tier ladder, and I've got like an ancestor altar on it, and I've got, you know, a daily working altar on it, and I've got at the very top, you know, the candle holders and all that stuff. And I find that I'm looking at things as a lifetime of magic as opposed to individual elements. And I think over time we tend to, like, not, how do I say this appropriately, kind of forget the significance of each of the elements. And, you know, there's just so much clutter on my altar. I really need to go through it. And but, you know, I have that thing about me where I'm scared to let certain things go. What if that's important later? I don't know if that's a Libra thing or a me thing, but it's like I've had this so long. There's sentimental properties to it. You know, am I just being a fucking child about it? You know what I mean? It's like, do I just need to let shit go already? How do you keep it, like, you know, spatially correct as far as, like, you know, it's not just tools, honey. You got clutter. Let's declutter you now.
Yeah. Well, you know who really inspired me about that topic is Marie Kondo. Like, I read her book. I watched Netflix specials, and she says, you know, to only keep what sparks joy. And, you know, I see everything that has an energy. If you look at something and you love it, then that's great. It uplifts you. But if you look at something and you're like, that reminds me of that douchebag that I fucking hate. I can't stand that guy, you know, like, then you need to put that in a box or get rid of it or re-gift it or something, because you don't want that energy to bring you down. So I have boxes of stuff, and then I have more simple altars. And Yeah, I just keep what sparks joy on them, and I try to keep it simple because that means there's less to clean too. But I'm also like Gaia's mm-hmm. little girl. Like whenever I go outside, I'm like, oh, a pine cone. Oh, an acorn. I better take it home. You know. So I make an offering of the natural products sometimes too.
But I think that's brilliant because if there is a certain type of magic that calls to you at a certain point, you know, if you're outside and something inspires you, obviously inspiration is going to make whatever magic you're supposed to do with it more intense and more likely to go off well because it's inspiring mm-hmm. you. I mean, if you're standing at your altar and you're doing a spell and it's like a spell you've done before or an incantation you've done before and you barely know what you're saying because you've said it so many times that it's lost its meaning, that's the mm-hmm. kind of thing that I think we fall into traps with, where the magic goes stagnant because we haven't done anything new. You know, I love the idea that you go outside and find a pine cone or an acorn or a leaf or, you know, just a rock
mm-hmm.
and something, it initiates something else with you. I think that's probably a pretty healthy way to go.
Yeah, thanks. And so I just cleaned my earth altar area, and I got rid of like a bird's nest that had fallen in my yard, and I got rid of like pine cones and my little acorn caps. But I have a little place in my yard where I make offerings to Ekate, so I just put them there with love, you know, with a little bit of moon water, and then I used the moon water to clean my altar, and it was so magical. And it's Virgo season right now, so this is the perfect time to clean an altar. You could also do it in Libra season because, you know, that's about beautifying as well. So, you know, it's great time for this.
Well, yeah, especially for me, because if I start now, I might finish by Libra season. I don't know. There's a lot on there. You know, as somebody who's been practicing for almost 50 years, maybe it's time. Maybe we need to clean out some of that old shit and start kind of fresh. But, you know, I also wanted to mention, in addition to this book, the book you're working on with Jason, Intuitive Witchcraft, you know, your Witch's Altar, all the other things you've done, you've contributed to Pagan Magazine, Starlight Witch Blog. I mean, you've got all these different Witch With Me. You have a YouTube series, which is awesome. But you also write stuff that's not necessarily pagan, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I wrote two fiction books, and I love writing, if you couldn't tell. I love words. I love crafting stories. I love constructing sentences. there is such a love of, like, where a sentence or a paragraph can take you, what it can evoke. You know, it's like a romanticism within me. So, yeah, I wrote two fiction books. They're self-published, and I love the stories.
That's awesome. And you're a dancer. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. That must be so amazing. I was a belly dancer for a brief time, like 40 years ago, and then I had a car mm-hmm. accident, so that kind of ended all that for me. But, yeah, and you're stunning. If anyone doesn't know, you ought to find out. But, yeah, do you still dance, too?
I do. It's more rare. I get to pick and choose what I want to do. So usually it's like artsy uh-huh. stuff, benefits. I let my right. friends who are in the group get the paying gigs, or the well-paying gigs anyway, because they need the money. we used to do the Masquerade every year, which is a big AIDS benefit show, and it's like the party of the year in my town. And it was so fun.
Nice.
It hasn't been happening lately, which is really sad. But, we've been out a little bit. I hope to get out more often because it really is a love, you know. Fire dancing is kind of frightening, even though I've been doing it for quite some time. But I love it. Like, there's nothing like lighting up and then feeling that reaction of the fire,
yeah.
You know, this dangerous thing, which is bright in your face. You're like,
yep.
Oh my God. Like, it's this feeling of, like, you forget who you are and where you are. Like, the fire is so bright, you can't see anything else around you. And all you know is,
wow.
Like, don't burn yourself. And then, you know, I put it on my head and, like, swing something else around. And so it's really fun. And we're creative. Like, we push the envelope. We're not just doing top 40 stuff or, you know, regular stuff. We wear weird stuff. We play weird music. And people love it. Like, we're like, do you want, like, standard music? Do you want to play the music? They're like, no, we want you to bring your own music. So we're like, okay,
right.
You asked for it. It's going to get weird. You're going to love it, I guess.
Well, and it sounds like people do. I would love to see that live sometime if the world ever gets back to some kind of semblance of, you know, public events happening again. It looks like, you know, there are some places that are, you know, still moving ahead with plans for next year, which I'm really excited
mm-hmm.
about, because I feel like I have been trapped in my town for 2.5 years now, and it's like, and I love where I live. I'm very happy. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, it feels like everything has been pretty stagnant because we've all kind of been trapped, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Have you had any opportunity to, like, venture out? I mean, not including today, because we already know you're going out, but, like, do you have plans coming up for public events at all?
Yeah, so I'm doing the local pagan festival at my hometown, Dayton, Ohio, and that's outside, and it's going to be really nice. There's always, like, a bunch of booths. We're raising money and food for the homeless shelter, I think, for
mm-hmm.
some kind of, like, food bank, I think. So there's that. And I'm also going to two events called Bitchcraft in Pittsburgh and in Louisville.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Bitchcraft. Like, I couldn't say no to that. I was like, I love
right?
that. I'm a bitch.
Right?
I'm one of those people who identifies as a bitch and a witch. So some people are like, I'm not either of those. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to move away from your pearl clutching and back into my swamp, I guess. But, it's really fun. I've been to one, and it's going to be – everyone's going to be masked up. There's going to be, like, spacing out and about. But I'll have some tables. I'm going to give a presentation. And I'm also doing something at Witch Lab in Columbus in October. So it's a full
mm-hmm.
calendar of events. But we're going to try to do it as safely as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad to see folks trying to get out and work with the situation the way it is, and just basically doing the best they can to try
mm-hmm.
to, you know, bring back a little bit of outdoor activities and stuff like that. I think it's important
yeah.
that, you know, even though we're trying to be safe, I think there's a level of, okay, but we still need to have a life, and let's see what we can do about doing life outside safely. So I think that's
mm-hmm.
really awesome. Pardon
yeah,
me.
I mean, we need it too. I feel like I had been just not doing anything for so long, I was starting to feel like
yeah.
cracked up a little. And I actually got to go out to Starwood this past summer too, which is a camping
Ooh.
Event. And it was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, it's a little bit shorter than a week long, but it was
mm-hmm.
all open air. And, you know, people were trying to be safe. There weren't a lot of masks, I will say that, but there were some, you know, people who were wearing them. But mostly people just stayed far away from each other, and nobody did anything gross or nasty. You know, the worst part is the porta potties, but, you know, you just deal with it. You hold your breath as long as you can.
Right.
yeah. And that made a huge difference.
Yeah.
Like, I realized we really need these. Like, I'd been so feeling so compressed, I didn't even realize it, and the decompression started, and I was like, when is it going to end?
I know. And it's been like, really isolating.
Yeah, and you're right that there are, you know, risks involved with anytime you go out, anytime you leave the house. But if you go to the grocery store with the mask on, maybe you can go to an event with the mask on. You know, it's indoors. That's how I see it.
Sure.
And I'm vaccinated. But yeah, it's I'm trying to be as safe as I can, and I'm not afraid to like put up my hand and be like, no, stay away. That's as close as you can get. No hugs. But yeah.
Yeah. I miss hugging folks. So I'm hoping by next year we're at a place that's hopefully a little bit better, because I miss Mystic South. I go every year, and it's like 2 years in a row it hasn't happened. So it's kind of like I really miss seeing speakers live and, you know, interacting with authors, you know, one-to-one, like in person. So I'm hoping we get back to that someday. So, yeah, I mean, it's difficult, but, you know, we've got to learn to adapt just like anything else in nature. You know, things change for a certain reason, you know, because certain things are not sustainable. And, you know, just as creatures adapt, we have to adapt too. And I just hope people are more open to adapting than they've been maybe before. Sometimes you just don't know.
But I hear you.
So you've got, so you're definitely got plans for doing things, which is way awesome. When is the book due to come out with Mr. Mankey?
We're thinking December of 2022. It's a long ways out. We're still doing the first edits. But yeah, it's looking good so far. I don't know. I'm just so happy with everything and all the answers that we got to, you know, like I got to read all these books that I've always wanted to read about the Greek gods and then, you know, figure out what to share. Because I just felt like there really hadn't been a good book written by pagans for pagans, specifically on the magical practices that Greeks were known to do, and pre-Greeks and Romans and so forth. And, you know, witchcraft was really maligned in the in Rome and beyond, and that's, you know, the Catholic Church. if anyone's, you know, thinking like, oh, no, they shouldn't be together, it's kind of more of a Roman artifact or a church artifact, you know, you could say as well, than anything else, because there's a lot of evidence that people practiced magic back in the day, like on a regular basis, all kinds of people.
Yeah. And you don't need to have 9,000 tools to be able to perform magic too. That's something I really want people to remember. And it's something that I know you've talked about a lot too, you know? So I'm excited about the new book, but I'm excited about your current book too. Air Magic is wonderful. Elements of Witchcraft, it was one of the four, and this book is great. Intuitive Witchcraft, I'd love to have you back on to talk about that some more too sometime. I'd love to have you on to talk about stuff that you wanted to write as opposed to stuff you were asked to write. No shade there, just saying. You're brilliant and wonderful to talk to, and I really enjoy having you on as a guest. And I just wanted to say before I let you go, thank you so much for coming and hanging out with me. And I hope you have beautiful weather for your day today. And I hope that I can get you back on very soon. Astrea Taylor, Air Magic, Elements of Witchcraft. Check it out, everybody, AstreaTaylor.com, and check out Witch With Me. She's got a YouTube series. Yay!
Thank you so much, Brina.
Thank you.
Talk
to you soon.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
All right, everybody. I will see you next week. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend, and stay safe out there. Bye.